This is Digital Story Podcast number 716, December 3rd, 2019. Today's theme is Why Full-Frame Photography Doesn't Have to Be Expensive. I'm Derek Story. 2019 was certainly the year for the resurgence of full-frame photography. Sony, Panasonic, Sigma, Canon, and Nikon all released new big sensor cameras with the latest technology and hefty price tags. But a little further back on the shelf are some very interesting, highly capable cameras at a fraction of the cost. What about them? Are they worth our attention? What if we already own one? Should we keep it or upgrade? I grapple with all of those questions on today's TDS Photography Podcast. Ansel Adams, he had his 4x5, and sometimes 8x10, right? For his fine art work. And our modern version of that, I think, is a full-frame digital camera, medium format digital notwithstanding. The larger sensor helps capture more dynamic range, and it gives us better control over depth of field. And if indeed we are using these cameras for our creative endeavors, they don't necessarily have to have the fastest frame rate or feature incredible autofocus. What we do need is excellent image quality, and if possible, at a price we can afford. I think 2019, at least for me anyway, has been the year of the full-frame 35mm, right? When I say full-frame, that's what I mean. 35mm sensor digital camera. So much activity. And I think with all the new activity, some very good cameras have been pushed to the back of the shelf a bit. We may own some of them. We may be thinking about some of them. And I think it's worth just taking a breath for a moment and looking at some of the cameras that came out before the gold rush in 2019 and seeing if any of those will fit our needs at a much more affordable cost. I'm going to start by listing the minimum specifications that I think a previous generation full-frame camera should have. Now, if you own one already, you can compare these numbers to yours. And if one is on your wish list, then I'll share a couple of excellent bargains that not only have those specs, but have proven their value over time. So here we go. What are the five specs that I think are important for a fine art digital full-frame camera? First of all, image resolution has to be at least 20 megapixels, right? 24 is better. Obviously, anything that goes up from 24 is even better than that. But I think it has to be at least 20 megapixels. And that's one of the reasons why, as much as I love my Olympus at 16 megapixels, I never used it quite as much for, you know, that creative work as I did my EM1 Mark II, which is at 20 megapixels. So I think 20 megapixels is where I draw the line in terms of being useful for our creative pursuits. Now, obviously, if you're just doing travel photography, vacation stuff, all that, those numbers can be much different. But I'm talking about photography that we're fairly serious about, that represents our vision and our, you know, creative abilities. Second, high ISO performance. I think that a full-frame camera that we would want to consider should be at least ISO 6400, you know, compatible, right? Should provide, in other words, what I mean by that is we shouldn't think at all about going to ISO 6400 if we need to. Now, more than that, of course, is great. And a lot of times we'll shoot less than that. We'll shoot at ISO 1600 or even 3200 when we're in those lower light conditions. But we want a camera that shoots well at 6400. Continuous shooting speed at full resolution. You want at least 5 frames per second, okay? Now, that is not lightning at all, right? We all know that. But I do think that it is a minimum specification for most of the work that we're doing. Because remember, I'm not talking about sports photography here. I'm talking about, you know, our creative pursuits, our fine art photography. And I think if you have 5 frames per second, then I think you're going to be okay on burst mode. Now, that's at full resolution, though. That's very important. That means that you can shoot 5 frames per second for the full-size RAW files. And, you know, that's something that you got to make sure that the spec is clear about. Movie recording, I might be a little behind the curve on this, but as long as it has full HD, you know, that's, you know, 1920 by 1080, at 30, 25, and 24 frames per second, I'm okay. I'm okay because I'm not really a movie guy. I'm talking more about stills photography. However, there are times when we do need to shoot some video. When we do need to shoot video, we want to make sure that we can do full HD and we want to have, you know, those different frame rates available to us, 30, 25, and 24. And finally, the rear LCD, it's got to be at least 3 inches. And you want at least 900,000 pixels or more. A million pixels obviously is better, you know, moving up from there. But you need 3 inches and at least 900,000 pixels. So those are the 5 things that I really look at. And now, beyond that, as we all know as photographers, there are many subtle things that you may really want. And for instance, one thing that I like is I like dual card slots. I like having, you know, 2 slots for 2 SD cards, and that's still my preferred card. You know, so there's little things like that. Some features that I like having built into the camera, such as an interval timer or HDR, you know, that handles it. Not that I would necessarily use that all the time, but sometimes I do want to use that, and I like having it. So, and we all have those things that we like, whether resistant is important for a lot of people. So I'm talking about just the very core spec here. And then beyond that, you need to look at the things that you really want. Oh, another one that I know a lot of people are adamant about is the rear LCD tilts and isn't fixed to the back of the camera. So, you know, that's something that I know a lot of people that, you know, are in our virtual camera club comment on when we're doing posts about various cameras. All right, now obviously if you can get more spec for your dollar, then do it. But this configuration really allows you to do serious work in a variety of situations. So unfortunately, my Nikon D700 that I like so much, it doesn't make the cut. It's 12 megapixels. And it has a CF card slot instead of SD card slots. It's got a couple little things that really prevents it from being a fine art full frame camera for me. Now, what I use it for, I keep it in the studio and I use it for lens testing for the film camera shop. So when I get Nikon glass in and I want to see how it performs before I put it on a film body, I'll put it on the D700, shoot a series of test shots with it and see how it does. The D700 is great for that, and you know, the 12 megapixels is fine, but it could not be my fine art full-frame camera. Which leads me to a post about the camera that you may already have. I think this is an interesting talking point, I really do, because a lot of folks who have moved to mirrorless photography, a lot of them still have their DSLR and maybe a few of their favorite lenses, and maybe they're not using them that much. You know, there are instances when having a full frame camera is really cool. I know one of them I'm going to talk about actually in the third segment on today's show, which is a Voigtlander 40mm f2 manual focus lens with a CPU chip that I just love having on a full-frame camera. Now, I could shoot with it on my Olympus cameras, and it's an 80mm, but it's a whole different lens on my Olympus Micro Four Thirds camera than it is when I put it on the D700. I get different shots. It behaves differently. I mean, everything about it is different, and sometimes I want that look. Whatever it is, and however you characterize it, sometimes I want that look that I get with the full-frame sensor as much as I love my Micro Four Thirds cameras and carry those around with me the bulk of the time. So the point that I'm making here is that if you have an older full-frame sensor camera that you're not using, you may want to start thinking about the situations where maybe it would be useful and maybe you would want to shoot with it sometimes. Pull it out, put on your favorite 50mm f1.8 lens or put on your favorite, you know, 28 millimeter f2.8 lens, whatever you happen to have in stock there. And especially if it's meeting those specs that I talked about, it could be quite useful. I mean, you could make some really nice stuff. And one of the things, when I was thinking about this, I ran across this post by David Dow, and it's titled, Ode to My DSLR, Why I Love the Nikon D610. And I just want to read you a passage from the article. I have the link to the whole post in the show notes, and I strongly recommend, if you're interested in this topic, I strongly recommend that you read the entire post. He's got lots of shots. I mean, just beautiful shots. He's a dad photographer who has a couple girls that he's raising with his wife, and he loves taking pictures, you know, candid shots in family situations, you know, indoors, you know, daily life, outdoors, daily life, all that kind of stuff. And he has just some wonderful work, shots that really I'm envious of. You know, having being a dad myself, and I look at some of his work and I go, man, what was I doing? Right? What was I doing? Anyway, so he put this post up only a couple weeks ago, and I ran across it and I read it and I was fascinated by it. I loved it. I loved his imagery, and I just want to read you a paragraph from it, and then I'll come back and comment a little bit more. I want to write this review, and this is about the Nikon D610, which is a full-frame camera that came out about 5-6 years ago. I want to write this review to share with others what I love about this camera, or more universally, any older DSLR, and show it's possible to learn and grow with older cameras. As well, I want to solidify in my own mind the things that I love about the camera. I have also come through this experience with the Nikon D610 to appreciate having and growing with a single, durable, and capable camera body through years of daily use. I've learned to see cameras, rightly or wrongly, as medium to long-term tools, a creative partner with whom you grow, where the more you get to know your camera and its limitations, the more you get out of it, accomplishing your creative vision with as little resistance as possible. And whatever resistance is there, it becomes a means to push your own creative capabilities to flow like water around a rock in a stream. Now, as I mentioned earlier, the entire piece is excellent, and he makes some wonderful points. And, you know, one of the things I was thinking is that I know for a fact there's a lot of full-frame cameras sitting in closets right now. Nikon, you know, the D610 is one of them. Canon 5D Mark II is another one that's probably in a lot of closets right now. Even the original 12 megapixel Canon 5D. There are cameras sitting in closets right now that maybe really could be used in conjunction, you know, in tandem with our mirrorless cameras, our Fujis and our Olympus and our Panasonics. Now, if you have a Sony full frame, then I could see, all right, you only need one or the other. But a lot of us, you know, are shooting with Micro Four Thirds or crop sensor cameras, and that full frame camera really could be useful to us. And what David talks about is, you know, the dynamic range that he gets with his camera, the look that that camera provides. And he did experiment with Fuji. He rented Fuji cameras. He even bought a couple Fuji cameras. And he did look at other systems. But in the end, he just liked the way his files looked in Lightroom, his RAW files from the D610. And I just think it's a fascinating piece. And there's a couple things that really strike me about this. One is, I like to appreciate tools that still work even if they're not brand new and state of the art. Obviously, I run the film camera shop, right? So, and I'm not asking you to be that crazy, but I'm saying that, for instance, cameras that were manufactured, let's say after 2012, 2014, are still very usable because the rate of change, of technological change, has really slowed down over the last few years. And I think we can appreciate some of these tools that we may already have. He has a Nikon 610, right? D610. How about a guy like me that doesn't have that or has an older camera like the D700? Well, I did a little research, and what I found were some incredible bargains on these cameras that are a little bit older. And of course, we know that as new cameras come out, a lot of times good cameras, cameras that have a gold rating, right, from DP Review, will drop in price. The first one I want to talk about, there's two of them that I have here. The first one is the Nikon D610. I think it is one of the best values in full-frame digital photography right now. Now, there is a Cyber Monday deal going right now. I know it's at B&H. I have a link to it. And I think it might be in a few other places in different configurations. And I have a feeling that even after Cyber Monday, which is today as I record this, this deal will probably still hang around or be very close. And basically what you get is a brand new in the box Nikon D610 with a Nikkor 50mm f1.8G lens for $897. And then they toss in, you know, the MBD14 multi-battery power pack, which is like, you know, if you buy it separately, it's like $250. And the wireless mobile adapter, which is another $60. By the way, that 50mm f1.8G, that's on sale right now for $179. Normally it's about $229, somewhere right in that ballpark there. And then they throw in a 64GB memory card, all sorts of stuff. So that whole package is $897 right now. And if you actually subtract how much the lens is worth and the multi-battery power pack is worth and all that, you end up getting a very capable full-frame digital camera for about $400 and some odd, which just blows my mind. It just blows my mind. And the specs, by the way, on the D610, those basic five core specs, 24 megapixel, 6 frames per second, base ISO is 100 to 6400. It can go up to 25,600. It does have HD movie recording, 3.2-inch 921,000 dot LCD. It is a fixed back LCD. It does have two SD card slots. It is weather sealed. I did a whole post about it on the digital story that really got into all the specs about this camera. I just think, though, that if you're not one of those lucky people that have a nice full frame camera sitting in your closet right now, and especially if you have some Nikon F-mount glass available to you, because remember, you can use the older AIS lenses on these cameras, and they work great. You register, you do a CPU register, so you tell the camera, you know, what lens it is, so you get metadata, and it helps with focus assist. It does have focus assist, even though it's a manual focus lens. I mean, Nikon F mounts work great on the newer camera. And so if you have some of those, or if you can, you know, if you want to pick some up very inexpensively, you can do that. So that's the first deal for those who aren't lucky enough. Now, the second one is the Sony Alpha A7 and Model 2, the second one. And the second one you can get now, again, for about $898, you know. And that is a heck of a camera for $898. Now, you know, the 4 is out right now, you know, and there was a big jump in resolution from, you know, the 2 up to the 4. But still, even with the 2 at $898, you get 24 megapixels, continuous shooting of 5 frames per second, and that's up to 50 exposures at 24 megapixel. ISO 100 to 25,600, HD movie recording, and a 3-inch 1,228,000 dot LCD, and it tilts. $898, you know, that, my friend, is a good deal. Now, the likelihood of you having Sony glass laying around like you might have Nikon F-mount glass probably is less likely because, again, the Sony Alpha is, you know, it's a mirrorless camera with the newer mount. I love adapting lenses to mirrorless cameras. I think it's fun, and I've gotten some terrific results. But I still want to have one native autofocus lens, you know, for that camera to augment that, because there are times you just want to pick up the camera, turn it on, and take pictures, right? You don't want to go through all the monkey business. And, you know, that's the thing that I liked about that Nikon D610 deal is you get the autofocus 50 millimeter, you know, the F18G, which is just a terrific lens. So those are two examples, and I have links to them in the show notes. Those are two examples that if you did want to go full frame, you don't have anything, you don't want to spend $2,500, $3,500, $4,000 for a state-of-the-art full-frame camera, you can do it. You can do it and get really great results. Now, again, if I were going to use this camera for sports photography or for professional journalism or something like that, then I would get the newer camera. But a lot of folks in our audience are serious enthusiasts. They're artists. They really have the time to work with a camera, as David said, you know, really get to know its features and creatively figure out how to work around them and produce beautiful, beautiful images. So where does that leave us? The point that I want to make here is that the rate of change with enthusiast cameras has slowed to the point where cameras from 2012 onward are serious photographic tools in the hands of an artist. And if you currently have access to lenses that you would have to buy all over again in a different mount, then the savings can be tremendous, leaving you with more budget for experiences to capture with those cameras. This is something to think about as we head out of the year of the full-frame digital camera and into whatever is next. Skillshare for photographers. So a few weeks ago, I was talking about Skillshare, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about it today. It's an online learning community with thousands of classes for creators, entrepreneurs, and curious people everywhere. You can take courses in photography, videography, audio production, you name it. They have it. So whether you're picking up a new skill for your day job, figuring out your next side project, or pursuing a long-time passion, Skillshare has classes for you. And I have to say, the photography courses, they are amazing. I have a new one to recommend, Fundamentals of Portrait Photography Using Natural Light to Create Drama. And this is by Justin Bridges. He's a fashion and portrait photographer based in New York City, and he's just one of the many top-notch instructors on Skillshare. You can join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare today with a special offer for TDS listeners. That would be you, right? Get 2 months free. That's right. Skillshare is offering the Digital Story community 2 months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free. To sign up, all you have to do is go to skillshare.com/TDS. Again, that's Skillshare.com, SkillShare.com/TDS to sign up and get your 2 months for free. No credit card is required, by the way, for that 2 months. Again, Skillshare.com/TDS. And a big thanks to them for sponsoring this show. Capturing moments with the Voigtlander Ultron 40mm F2 SL2S. This is a bit of a continuation from my post last week on how I became a 40mm photographer guy, right? And I finally did get to test this Voigtlander, and I have to tell you, it is a very interesting lens. It is the true convergence of traditional meets modern. Now, I have the F-mount version for Nikon, and I'm actually using it on both the D700 and my Nikon film cameras, my 35mm film cameras. And when I say convergence, what they have done is that they, you know, Voigtlander has been around for a very, very long time, making great lenses in Japan now. They started out in Europe, and they're in Japan now. They're known for a little bit of their retro styling, you know, their analog styling. Yet they have a very modern glass inside. The lenses perform very well, but yet have a characteristic that's different than what you'll see with other lenses. This 40 millimeter, this latest 40 millimeter, there has been some different iterations of it, has a wonderfully textured scallop style focusing ring that's just beautiful. And one thing about Voigtlanders, if you've ever had a chance to shoot with one, they have this buttery, silky, wonderful focusing, this manual focusing, that's just a joy to use. They really have that part of it down. Now, I'm not talking about a lens that costs a couple thousand dollars. I'm talking about a lens that you can get right now for $419. Then the convergence part. This is really interesting. What they did with this current version is they put a CPU chip in there with the contacts. So, for instance, when I use the lens, even though it's this manual focusing lens, when I use it with a Nikon D700, D610, on and on and on, you know, all the way up to scale, you know, F5, F6, whatever, D4, D5, whenever I use it with those camera bodies, the camera bodies recognizes the lens, and that's important in a lot of ways. One is you get all the metadata, so you don't have to do any, you know, any CPU registering with the lens. The camera just knows what lens is on there, and it shows up in your metadata, which I absolutely love. But you don't have to switch gears. You don't have to go to CPU, registering. You don't have to do any of that stuff. It also helps in terms of the programmed exposure and the focus assist. And the focus assist, like in this case with Nikon cameras, is really quite good, especially if you narrow down the focusing points to just the center point and then use that for, you know, your focus assist. It's not going to change focus anyway because it's a manual focus lens. So once you focus in on whatever you want, then you can recompose. No problem. You don't have to worry about holding down the shutter button halfway or any of that stuff. The CPU chip is really helpful. Plus, it allows you to shoot in program mode, aperture priority mode, manual mode. So you get a lot of the modern benefits thanks to the CPU chip, but you still get this very classically designed, beautifully finished, wonderful metal lens with its own characteristic. So it has both. And I just totally, totally enjoy it. I love it. If you like that sort of thing, let's say that you're not ready to be a film photographer again, but you want to have, you know, a little different look, I would encourage you to take a look at this lens and then maybe shoot it in some monochrome modes, maybe use it with different profiles. Obviously, you can adapt it to mirrorless cameras. However, a crop sensor will change the focal length, the effective focal length. So it's 40 millimeter on full frame, and then it changes from there. I thought you might be interested in it, and it sort of finishes off, you know, my discussion about, you know, wonderful 40 millimeter lenses, how, you know, they're not too wide, they're not too long. Oh, they're just so fun to work with, and they're perfect for capturing the moments of our lives. I have just a little bit of virtual camera club business. First of all, a big thanks to our Inner Circle members. We have a few new Inner Circle members, which always just delights me to no end. Welcome aboard, new members. So happy to have you with us. Inner Circle members sign up through Patreon. We have a Patreon tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. We run a site just for them. And they're the ones that help support this podcast. They're the ones that help me pay the bills to keep this on the air. And I so appreciate them. And I also appreciate their camaraderie, their fellowship, and their feedback when I need it. If you're interested in supporting the show, of being an Inner Circle member, then just go to any page of the Digital Story, click on the Patreon tile, go over to our site, take a look, and hopefully you'll join this group of wonderful artists that are supporting this show. I have tiles on every page of Digital Story for B&H and Amazon. A lot going on with both of those sites this time of year, a lot of deals going on. If you click on one of those tiles first, then do your shopping, you help support the show. We have affiliate links in the show notes for this podcast. And so some of the products in this podcast contain that affiliate code that credits the Digital Story for any purchases made from B&H or Amazon via that click-through. Now, depending on the purchase, we may receive some financial compensation, but it doesn't cost you anything more. And we appreciate whether you click on the tiles or you click on the links in the show notes. We appreciate the support because it helps us keep this boat afloat. Also, I want to mention that our workshop is coming up in March, our LA Street Photography Experience. If you're interested in joining us, just go to thenimblephotographer.com, click on the workshops link, get on the reserve list, and when the reservation forms go out, then you'll be able to receive one as well. And finally, a huge thanks to our friends at Red River Paper. I just did a project for my boys. So they were up for Thanksgiving, and they have their own place now down in San Jose. They both have jobs down there. And what they wanted to do, they have a place, the two of them and their buddy, and they've known their buddy that's rooming with them all through college. So, I mean, these guys are tight. They've gone through a lot of things together. And what they wanted to do, which I just thought was wonderful, they wanted to have a wall in the house that has some shots of them, you know, through the years, kind of, you know, to make it homey. I thought, what a cool idea. So we had shots from the past because, yes, I'm a dad photographer. And, you know, their buddy Jason was in a number of those shots. So they picked a few that they liked. And then we shot some new shots of them in their new place, so both inside and outside, so they'd have those too. So what they did during Thanksgiving holiday, the day after on Friday, they hung out at the studio, and we did printing. We did printing together. So we had sports on the TV, right? So we're watching sports. We're doing prints, and it was really great having them there because I could go over, okay, what do you think about this? Do you like this? Do you want the black and white version? You know, do you want this size? Do you want floated in paper, or do you want it edge to edge? You know, all that kind of stuff. And we were there working on this together for a couple hours, and it was absolutely fun. And I have to tell you, when they walked off with that box of prints that they're going to frame and put on the wall, they were thrilled. They were thrilled. It was like treasure to them. And that's what printing does. That's the thing that printing can do. And Red River Paper, we printed all the stuff on Red River Paper. You know, they are the ones that help us learn how to do this. You know, they provide the supplies, the training, the reviews of the material, you know, the different printers and so forth. They really are the support system for endeavors like this. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. Click on it. And they have a wonderful Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, that's going to do it for me today. I hope you enjoyed putting a bow on 2019 with full-frame cameras. Who knows what's going to be the big thing in 2020, but if you stay tuned here, you'll certainly be right in the middle of it. Have a great week. See you next week. Until then, bye-bye now.